Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday. It is the 28th of March, and it's very nice to have you with us on this March day. Cold, you know, cold, a little drippy, but it's okay. It's spring. It's what we're that's what we expect, I guess, in this time of year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Good morning. It's very nice.
It's baking here in Northampton. We're all just getting tans, just saying.
Oh.
Well, that's good. That's great. I have tickets to a baseball game next weekend, a week from today. And I'm worried that I'm just going to be sitting out freezing to death. But hopefully not. Hopefully not.
Maybe if it's in Northampton. It's always sunny here.
Well, that's because you're there. That's why. Well, good morning, all. Welcome. Let's get started. We have a lot to do this morning, a lot to talk about. And we welcome your input. panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, good morning. How are you, sir?
Well, I'm good, and I want to thank you for inviting me in and with this distinguished group of people who always make me smile.
We can continue to make them smile, can't we? Rosemary, Fran.
Oh, I'm going to work on making them smile, yeah.
We'll do our best.
Research professor and Stuart Rice Honorary Chair at the University of Massachusetts Amherst College of Information and Computer Science, CICS to friends, and faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Fran Berman is in the house. Good morning, Fran.
Hello.
So I want to tell you just a little secret, Fran, and that is that last night Rosemary and I did an event over at RPI. And it was at MPAC, and I think we had a very nice time.
We talked to each other
about media, and it was very nice, and we had a nice crowd, and it was lovely. It was all very, very nice.
We were a little depressing, but yes.
Yeah, we were accused of being a little too down. But anyway.
What hope can you give
us?
But none.
You mean because of the state of modern journalism?
Yeah.
Well, less about journalism in the world. Yes, yeah. I think that was the problem. But anyway, so it went a little long. Mm-hmm. And there was a reception, and people were very nice. And so I was off schedule as far as getting the topics out. So I sat down in the corner of the area where we were having the reception, and I started putting stories together. And I'm looking at the stories, and Jim Henler, who was handling this whole thing, pointed to the one tech story we have today and say, "Oh, good, have Fran do that one." Because he'll be on Thursday. He didn't want to touch it. So it's all you.
Oh, my God. I actually know a bunch about that story. So
well, that's,
when and if it's time, I'll be happy.
That is exactly what he said. So we're very excited to have you be a part of it.
Unlike most of the other things we discussed, I actually know something about that.
Rosemary Armeo is an investigative reporter. She is a adjunct professor at RPI, as well as UAlbany. Good morning.
Hello.
And Mike Spain is in the house, former Times Union Associate Editor and our dear friend. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm glad to hear it went really well last night at RPI.
It was fun. You know what was interesting? They gave us like this really weird demographic breakdown of the audience. So it was like, 5 are alumni. 20 are students, 8 are staff, 12 are professors. Many people from the community. It was like we knew sort of who the various people were,
There were people sitting there with computers like fact checking you while you talked. That was a little intimidating.
Yeah, that's right.
But they must have loved you guys, and you had some fun.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And
it
yes.
was. Yeah. Yeah. They were very nice. Very.
Well,
very nice.
They are really star. You guys are stars. No question about it.
Yes, you are.
You are. Stars.
I want to live like Madonna.
That's what you are.
Everyone knows you, and they come
where
up
they
and
take
talk
your dog.
To you. They steal your dogs. No, that was Lady Gaga.
No, I know Gaga. Yeah.
37 years old today, Lady Gaga.
Oh, congratulations!
Still
Happy
adorable.
Birthday.
I have a kid that age.
Just saying.
All right, let's get started. We've got a lot going on. I do want to start. Obviously, there's what's going on in Israel, and I do want to get to that. And I want to give that quite a bit of time this morning. But I would like to talk and begin our conversation about the school shooting in Tennessee. Another tragedy that took place yesterday, and it's a horrible story, and it's a there are differences here. There are things that are not but it's another school shooting, and yet this one where the shooter was a woman. Which is
who identifies as transgender?
That was,
by the way.
Yeah, that was terrifying. Pretty confusing the way that was reported.
Very. So there's that. It was at a private Christian school, and apparently the suspect had been a part of the school at one point. A 28-year-old from Nashville fatally shot three children and three adults on Monday at a private Christian elementary school, leaving behind writings and detailed maps of the school and its security protocols. I found that to be chilling.
How do you deal with that?
I don't know. And this is the latest episode of gun violence that has devastated American families and communities. The assailant opened fire just after 10 a.m. inside the Covenant School in the affluent Green Hills neighborhood, where children in preschool through sixth grade had just begun their final full week before Easter break. As a spokesman for the Nashville police wrapped up a news conference on the mass shooting at an elementary school, an exasperated mother stepped up to the cluster of microphones and cried out, "Aren't you guys tired of covering this?"
Yes, we are.
Which I think is...
but what's the meaning? You shouldn't be covering it? I mean, I don't get that.
Oh, no. She was actually involved. She was the mother of a victim in another school shooting. And her point was, aren't you? And she was visiting town, staying with her sister, I believe.
That's right.
And came down and broke up the press conference to say, when are we going to do something about this? Well, we can talk about that in a second. But the shooter, who the police identified as Audrey Hale, had entered the building by firing through a side door, armed with two assault-style weapons and a handgun. According to John Drake, the chief of the Metropolitan Nashville Police Department, and went to the second floor firing shots before being killed by police. Chief Drake said that the assailant was, at one point, a student at the school. Surveillance video released by the police on Monday night showed the shooter drive up to the school in what the police described as a Honda Fit. In the clip, two sets of glass doors shatter from bullets before the assailant ducks into the building through the broken glass. Wearing camouflage pants, a black vest, and a backward red baseball cap, the assailant walks through rooms and hallways with a weapon drawn. At one point, the shooter can be seen walking in and out of the church office and down a hallway past the children's ministry as the lights of what appear to be a fire alarm start to flash, I would assume because of the broken doors. There was confusion about the gender identity of the assailant in the immediate aftermath of the attack. Chief Drake said that the shooter identified as transgender. Officials used she and her to refer to the shooter, but according to social media posts and a LinkedIn profile, the shooter appeared to identify as male in recent months. The police in Nashville identified the six victims as, it's Evelyn Diekhouse, Hallie Scruggs, and William Kinney, 9 years old. 9 years old.
Can you imagine if you were the parent?
No, I can't. And
I can imagine being the grandparent. My granddaughter is nine, and last week I sat in her elementary school waiting for her to pass so that she could pick me up and we would go have lunch together. And I have to say, as a journalist, I sat there imagining someone coming in and aiming a gun at those children because it's so sickening that it happens this frequently. Yeah, it's horrifying.
It's like a formula now that the media follows. There's already like a pattern that all you have to do is you have to go and you have to do the scene. You have to talk to the families of the victims. You have to profile those who've died. You have to try to do as much as you can to profile the shooter and where they got their weaponry and what kind of weapons it was. It's just... It's textbook.
Actually, I was going to mention that the Washington Post did make a real effort today, or this weekend, actually. The story came out on the same day of the shooting. I put it on my Facebook page. It's called The Blast Effect. And they took two real children, 9 years old. No, he was a first grader, 6 years old and 15 years old, and ran pictures of them, you know, as they were in life. And then did a simulation using an animation of their bodies and showed those high-velocity bullets going through their body and the damage that was done. It is a disturbing, visually striking, amazing piece of work. So, yes, I know the media gets blamed for everything, but we have done our part.
Well, that package of stories was about the AR-15.
Correct.
And it is, you know, gruesomely coincidental that it would come out the day of this shooting.
Although, you know, chances are, right? I mean,
that's right.
That's what they said. You know, any day you run it could be shooting the way it's been.
You're gonna deal with that. I think that the other thing we you know, I hearken back to Uvalde, Texas, and the shooting there, and where there was a great deal of concern, rightfully so, and of investigation of how police handled that. In this case, from the time they were called, the shooter was dead within 10 minutes.
Right.
You know, you look at what happened and how they handled it, and of course, there's probably a lot more to that, and it will be discussed fully.
Right.
But on the face of it, it looks like it was a very immediate handling of a situation.
Well, that's an interesting phrase that you use, because we don't have a death penalty really anymore, and so the death penalty either occurs while the thing is going on, or it doesn't. Mm. Is that right?
You mean if they survive, if the attacker survives, they won't face the death penalty?
Basically, depending on where,
what state it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this person was killed.
Exactly.
The shooter.
Yes. That's the point.
But
it seems that the shooter was prepared to go after more people had more ammunition, had two semi-automatic you know, weapons, et cetera.
And given the plans in that were found, the drawings, there seemed to be an effort to go throughout the school, not just to the one building. So my point being that it was shortened very much, it seems, by law enforcement taking great care and being very fast.
I was also concerned that the shooter has been identified as someone who is transgender, because our country has been attacking and assaulting trans people for no reason for a long time, and now there's an excuse, and you know it's going to happen. We didn't see anybody saying, oh, it's almost all the mass shooters, all the school shooters are young men, so we should go after young men, and they're all bad. But you are going to see that with transgender people, and I'm just really nervous and horrified by that.
So what should be done in a case like this? You don't mention it, or what?
Oh, no, you have to.
It has to be mentioned, and it has been. But
we also don't know.
I don't, right.
I mean,
we don't
know.
I mean, there was a changing narrative of what the person, how they identified.
I don't believe in that whole idea that you somehow do better coverage if you downplay who the shooter is and only talk about the victims.
I agree with you.
The story needs to be complete, and we need to know as much as possible about criminals, and that's horrible criminals,
You can go through some of these stories 20 paragraphs before they mention a name, before they mention an age, before they mention a gender. And what good is that doing anyone as far as, you know, finding out how it happened and what was responsible? You know, was the person 20? Was the person 40? Was the person 80?
Well, this person's connection to the school is amazing. You know, it's interesting. It's fascinating. Was there an event when they were a student? Did something happen afterwards that somehow came back to haunt them? And this was retribution of some kind.
Early reports said the shooter may have resented being sent to a Christian school, and if truly it's a case of a transgender child, it may have been a horrible experience.
We'll know something from that. The right after it happened, the Washington Post had a list of the 300 and something school shootings, you know, since Columbine, and in only four cases was a woman a female shooter. And it's interesting because they usually do fit a pattern, but this is a bit unusual. And we'll know more about it, and I think we should.
Another part of the pattern is this shooter did have a manifesto. This shooter did have maps.
Yes.
This shooter did have a profile online. There was information available. And, you know, you think that we're less than 24 hours from when the event occurred, and we still know, we know quite a bit. We don't know everything, obviously, but we know quite a bit because of that profile.
Well, group, is there anything that we're talking about now that Joe's talking about, Rosemary's talking about, Mike?
Got about a minute, but go ahead.
Okay, and we can come back to it, but is there anything that should be done to prevent this kind of thing from happening?
Well, we've been talking.
Yeah, I think that's the real question. I don't know.
Thanks.
For me, this is just, it's tragic, and it's irrelevant, you know, how well we make it a narrative or entertainment or how unhappy the person was. It's like, why is this an option for expressing horrible or terrible or whatever things that happened to you? You know, why is it? And, you know, I just really don't understand that. I mean, all of the rest of the details are tragic and horrible, but you know, why is this even an option to express your perhaps abject unhappiness through shooting people?
Who says
why,
it's
why is that? Why is that a thing?
We got to take a break. So I'm going to hold you all. We'll be right back after news from the BBC. Panel at WAMC.org to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok is here. Mike Spain, Fran Berman, and Rosemary R. Mayo. We were discussing this. I will admit I forget exactly where we were in the conversation, but Fran, I think you were up.
Yeah, I was just talking about, you know, to me, all these details are irrelevant if we made a good story about it or why this very tragic person did this even more tragic thing. I just don't even understand why this is an option, that something happens in your life that you decide the way to deal with this is to, you know, get a gun and shoot people. I mean, I really don't understand, A, why it happens over and over and over again, and B, you know, despite the fact that, you know, essentially majority of Americans really care about the means of this, which is usually guns, you know, we're not doing more about it. I really don't get that. You know, in all the years that I've lived and all the sophisticated and interesting and wise people I've talked to, I really don't have a good answer for that.
Well, what would you like to do is my question. In other words, in order to prevent this from happening, are there steps you think we should be taking that you want to tell us about now?
You mean in the Fran world of civilized discussion
in the Fran world.
Tolerance and better behavior? I mean, I do think, and I have to say, you know, I do think these, you might be surprised at this, these digital technologies in many ways are not helping. I think the way we interact with each other is really difficult. I think we don't get to know each other. You know, we are mass everything. I think that mental health is fragile, especially with the pandemic and the scale that we all operate under. I just think, you know, the entire world sort of takes us to a place where these sort of, and it's publicized in some really dramatic ways, always. And I just think all of that sort of trends us towards the more dramatic behavior rather than the more complicated, more nuanced, more personal behavior. I don't know how to solve that, Alan.
And
I'm not sure that at any point in time, you know, people were much better at that. But in my own life, I know that when you know people and you can kind of deal with whatever's happening on a more personal level, on a more deep level, you know, the answers are complicated, but they're better answers.
Excuse me, but that's all very nice,
yes,
my learned professor. But these conditions obtain in the entire world, and the United States is the only place where we have shootings like this. It's way less complicated than you've made it. We have too many guns, too easily gotten. That's it.
Hey, I don't disagree with you in the least. I just think the whole gun thing in the U.S. is crazy. Although, you know, let me just say, having now living in the balmy Northeast, you know, I know a lot of people who say, you know, we grew up shooting animals. You know, a bear threatened our house, or, you know, we ate deer or something like that. So I do think even the, you know, I grew up in L.A., and if you had a gun, you were going to kill somebody.
Right.
You know, you didn't go surfing with a gun, I'll tell you that much. So,
but these people who are out in rural...
I've nuanced my point of view since I've lived here, because I know people, not who shoot people, but who have, you know, used guns when they were growing up because they lived in a really rural place.
Right. But do you need a an AR-15? And
why are they so
readily available? This shooter apparently armed with two AR style weapons,
right?
As well
not
as a handgun.
Shooter.
Yeah.
As obtained, unhappy as the shooter was, yeah. I'm not defending them in the least.
No, I understand.
No, but these guns were obtained legally. The police believe at least two of them were, and. They're just too easy to get, as everyone has been talking now, and President Biden referenced the assault weapon ban, which was passed in 1994, prohibited the sale of these type firearms, but it expired 10 years later, and nobody in Congress had the guts to renew it. And he's calling for a renewal of that, and it's crickets when it gets to Congress. But I'm glad that we're working on TikTok, because that can really hurt our children really badly. It's good that they're moving forward with aggression against TikTok, but why don't we do anything?
You know, I think the whole TikTok thing is pretty ridiculous, I have to tell you.
Well, it's what I'm trying to say.
I'm not going to get rid of TikTok, and TikTok is problematic, but
it is, but it's like the leaders in our Congress are aggressively going after TikTok to protect our children. Something that could really protect our children, like an assault weapons ban, nothing.
Now, that's an excuse. They're not doing it to protect.
Oh, I know that. They're doing it for political
reasons. They're doing it to slam China. And they're doing this. They're not doing a real thing to protect their children and do anything about guns, because that threatens a source of their income and support. So it's as simple as that.
So meanwhile, and I know this has gotten a lot of play, as well it should. But the congressman who's the high school is in his congressional district, circulated a Christmas card in 2021 of himself, his wife, and his three children, who I would say range in age from about 9 to probably 13 or 14 years old. And isn't it cute? They all have assault weapons. And this was the Christmas card that was sent out. Obviously, that also sends a message. And yesterday, he offered his thoughts and prayers to families of the victims. But that's the culture that we're dealing with, and that's that's not even like somebody found a picture of them. This is what he was circulating to his constituents to wish them a happy holiday, and that is what is.
And then
is
the
so
question is, why is that okay?
Well, that's right. And I mean, Mike and I were talking about this during the break. I mean, it is true that this was called out the minute it happened, when people started to receive the card. It was called out that this was horrifying. But it's even more horrifying now that there are 3 9-year-old students, 3 adult teachers in their 60s who are dead as a result of gun violence in the district. Not to say that he is responsible for that by any stretch. However, that culture that allows you to legally, as Mike pointed out, to get the gun and to get the guns in this case is of great concern.
Well, you know, people make up culture, and that's what our problem is here. Do we really say this is unsatisfactory? This shouldn't be done by anyone. Call out the people who are doing it.
Well, I think we do, but it also depends on where you live, right?
Yeah.
The Washington Post story that, Rosemary, you were talking about mm-hmm. also says that there are statistically enough AK-47 type, you know, these AR-15 mm-hmm. rifles out in, you know, out there now in the U.S., that one in every 10 adult men could own one. You know, there's one for every 10 adult men.
You mean could own one, but
Well, statistically, somebody owns 20 of them, and I don't own any, and you don't own any, and Joe doesn't own any, and we're three men that don't own them, so there's somebody who has more than one. But
I think the number, by the way, I read it years ago, is three per male.
Oh, three firearms.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, these are AR-15s.
And that's
AR-15s alone, these you know, basically these weapons of war. And that's what they were. They were designed. They interviewed the guy who designed it. He was a World War II, or they had a story about him. He was a World War II veteran who intended their use to replace the heavy, you know, M1 rifle that was soldiers carried. Never intended at all for the, you know, for it to be used as a consumer product. It's outrageous.
You know, and I know hindsight's 20/20, but so often during these discussions, eventually it'll come along to we should, you know, you fight guns with guns, and there should be someone in the school with a gun to take it out and so forth. This, you look at this video, this person shot out the windows of the school that was locked. They walked in, and police were immediately notified, but not quick enough to save the life of six people.
One of the amazing parts of the article that I mentioned, the blast effect in the Washington Post, is it has set up with a timer. And at the end it says, you've taken like 3 minutes and 14 seconds to read the story. In that amount of time, X number of students were killed in X shooting.
Right.
It's really impactful, and it does bring home the extent of the problem we're talking about. But of course, as we have made clear here, we don't have a solution that gets around the fact that we have feckless lawmakers and a population that is enamored of guns and our right to own them.
And one of the issues, too, is high-capacity magazines that you can buy for these guns and then refill. Many states, including New York, limit how many bullets you can have in these magazines. But, you know, that was not the case in Tennessee, right, where there's no limit on that. So you can have a really, really super efficient way to gun down a lot of people very quickly.
And so you ask yourself about those super efficient states like Tennessee that don't deal with it, in my mind, properly. What is it that prevents them from doing so? In other words, are there so many people in their constituencies that they risk losing political office as a result of doing what's right?
Well, it's been documented that the arms manufacturers that are becoming, you know, richer and richer and richer by all this have funded the NRA's, National Rifle Association's, efforts in Congress to buy off and use campaign contributions, use publicity campaigns, et cetera, to sway politicians not to pass any laws that would infringe your right to own as many guns as you want and have as much ammunition as you want. And it's been very, very, very effective. And we also scare people. You know, these campaigns that they run are scaring people, alleging the government is coming to take your guns away. The next thing is they're going to put you in jail. I mean, these kinds of tropes and conspiracy theories prevail, even though there's really no evidence of it. And just look around the world. There's plenty of civilized countries that have nothing like this as a problem, and it's because they manage firearms much, much better.
Rightfully so, Rosemary. You mentioned the article about the about the blast effect, but an accompanying article in that package from the Washington Post mm-hmm. talked about the North Carolina town that welcomed the plant
the Ruger plant that makes these firearms. Mm-hmm. And while many liberal states have shunned them and said, we don't want to do business with you, this gets back to culture, right?
Yep.
I mean, the community is welcoming them, said it's good for jobs, it's what we want, and we're going to put this factory in our town.
In many ways, I feel like this whole show is a rerun. We've done this discussion over and over again, and that's one of it. I mean, there are certain people, including Scalise in the House, who was shot himself as a shooting victim, who have decided that children death and mayhem is a fine price to pay for the right to have a gun. Any gun you want, isn't as many as you want.
And
so
there it is. As a right for self-promotion, too, Rosemary. I mean, that's a big part of it.
And it will also...
Okay, but the question still remains, what do we do? I mean, so many people are so upset, and this rightly so. This keeps happening, as Rosemary very correctly points out. The amount of violence in this country is staggering, and it's staggering compared to other countries.
I mean, I think we know what we can do.
What do we do?
I think we know what we can do. It's just if it can be done and if it will be done, then the answer is probably no. I mean, if a good start would be an assault weapon ban.
Yes.
Be an excellent start. But is that going to happen?
Enforcing the laws that already exist would be a good start, too, on background checks. And yeah, there are a number of steps that I get this thing in my internet feed, inspiring quotes. And today's is from Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And it says, real change, enduring change, happens one step at a time. So this discussion of what can we do has stymied us. How many times have Democrats rejected an offer put out by Republicans saying, no, that won't really solve the whole problem? This problem is not solvable in one piece of legislation in one action. It's going to take a whole bunch of little steps.
It's going to take society standing up and saying this has to
enough.
Stop.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. We'll take a break. We'll be right back after this. I think there's another aspect to this, and it's certainly not a major aspect, but I do think it's an aspect to it. And again, it gets to a matter of culture, and that is that when we've been talking in the past about let's use vaping e-cigarettes, and there was a proliferation of candy flavored tobacco and bubble gum and watermelon and fruit stripe and all this other stuff, and people got all worried about it because it was bringing kids in, that it wasn't yucky old tobacco, that suddenly this was like candy. And one 12-year-old said, this is better than using chapstick to have that, you know, to have that taste. But the marketing of these guns, especially the AR-15s, they're in bright colors. They're pink. They're purple. You can have them personalized. There's an American flag gun that is produced. These are guns that are marketed to be given as gifts. And I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that it is. Maybe it's a stretch to say that if you have a gun, you are inclined to use it, obviously not in a deadly way, but the fact that it's out there and it's used as something to say, well, we'll show you, we'll get a gun, we'll get it legally, and it'll be really cool looking too.
So we had an incident at Albany Med yesterday,
yes,
too, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Let's talk about it. Go ahead.
Well, it was a man was spotted in the hospital with a weapon, and they locked down the hospital. He was later found it was a BB gun. But, I mean, we have procedures now for death and mayhem in our public institutions. That's
sure.
Kind of amazing.
You know, the thing
BB gun could take somebody's eye out, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, they locked themselves into a patient's room, and apparently they were related to one of the one of the patients. And the which, you know, brings up the question, and I'm not faulting anyone. I'm just asking the question about, you know, getting into to any hospital like that. Is, you know, do we need to have metal detectors? I know some do, some have them. I don't know.
I would have thought the parking fees would keep out the riffraff.
Well, it's a good point, Rosemary. But and the other thing too is that I was a little surprised, given the tensions that happen in hospitals. I was actually surprised this is the first time that this is, had ever happened there, where somebody had brought in a gun.
Do you think it'll be the last?
Well,
remember the
no.
first school shooting?
Yeah.
A new place to shoot up! Yay.
Well, and there have been other hospital shootings, but Silver Alert, I believe, right?
Right.
Code Silver. Indicated that this was what was going on at Albany Med. A lot of letters. Let's go to those. Justin says, one way to help address this issue would be to push for mandatory tracking devices on assault rifles so that if they come in close proximity to densely populated high-traffic locations, i.e. schools, malls, big box stores, law enforcement is notified.
Oh, well, the trouble with that is there's many states where that's completely legal.
You have open carry. Open carry.
In fact, Tennessee had just changed their laws to make that easier.
Put it in the back of the truck and go wherever you want,
yeah.
And including the close proximity to a big box store. Go ahead.
It's a really interesting remediation, but these things can be hacked too. So even if they weren't legal, you know, it's not foolproof, although it could cut out some things. Although, what do you do if you know someone has a gun? You know, what are you supposed to do in that moment?
What would you do?
You mean me personally?
Yes.
I mean, part of it is like, I think that I'm a pragmatist really at heart, and I think people don't have the person power to sort of deal in the moment with things that might be dangerous. Although we did a good experiment during COVID on exposure notification. I mean, your Bluetooth could actually tell you if you're close to a gun or not. And there's a lot of privacy issues, by the way, on something like that. But, you know, it may be that you can kind of provide the kind of infrastructure that people could know on their own and doesn't require the big box store to now, you know, send a SWAT team when they kind of don't know when somebody has, you know, a rifle in their the back of their pickup truck or something like that, and they're not bringing it in. So I don't know. I mean, I do think, Alan, I know you're like sick to death of hearing me say these things, but if you really want to solve the problem, seriously want to solve the problem, you have to nail the details. That's a really important part of it. Otherwise, you have, you know, a wonderful sounding remediation, but the problem doesn't get solved.
Well, again, I think that's wanting to solve it all in a step. The fact is that if a school were alerted that someone was in the district with or in the area, whatever that area might be, with a gun, you'd call the police the same way as you would call and say there's a suspicious person hanging in my backyard, and the police send out somebody. And that is frequently enough to prevent a crime from happening. We don't even take that step.
But you've just circumscribed the problem. That wasn't the problem that Alan asked about the big box store problem. I think, Rosemary, you're right for a school or something like that. For a school or, you know, hospital or something like that, where
right.
you would not expect this kind of thing, you know, think about the parking lot. You got to
right.
figure that part out.
Right.
But
I'd be happy if we could deal. I'm sorry, friend. I don't mean to interrupt, but yes, I would be happy if we could just start maybe with the schools. I can't
yeah.
bear the thought of 9-year-olds dying. Dying, going
yeah,
to school.
Yeah.
It's awful.
We have a ton of letters. We just have a few minutes before the top of the hour break, so let me get to as many as we can. If you want to, any panelist who wants to jump in, please do. Ellen says, I so appreciate the discussion today. Does anyone think President Biden has the power to ban assault weapons through an executive order? He does not.
And he does not.
And he's admitted that. I mean, he said that he is using everything that he can, and it brings us to this point. You would still want Congress to vote to support it, but could it be done? Then we go to this. I think the congressman from Nashville should get Christmas cards from his constituents with the face of the little girl who was looking out the bus window and crying yesterday. It's a powerful image, but it will never change the Republicans' gun culture.
And it won't touch him. He'll just blame the shooter. You know, this was a deranged person.
And
it has
my prayers
to do with guns.
And thoughts are with the families.
Yeah.
Kay writes, May lawmakers be persuaded to ban assault weapons if the increasing number of mass shootings discourage tourism on a scale that dramatically affects the economy, especially state economies? I don't think they care about that.
Wait, affects tourism? Like, we're not going to go where there are no shootings, so where the hell do we go?
Yeah, and I think commerce is a big part of the rationale that is employed by the gun people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Well, I mean,
jobs. Yeah.
Yeah, jobs.
Bring us into your community, you'll have jobs.
And also the fact of large events where you think of the music festival in Las Vegas, things like that. Assault weapons is the title of this note from Ellen. I so appreciate. I think I already read that. I'll stay. I think I got some duplicates there. I apologize. Then we go to Sarah, who says, what is the justification for keeping an assault weapon? It is a weapon of war. Are we at war with our neighbors next door? They should be totally banned. We should buy them back at a discount and then destroy them. Possession should be considered a serious crime. The Second Amendment should not trump the right of other unarmed citizens to live.
Should.
I agree with her 100%. Society has to act. I mean, we have to petition our elected officials to do just that and support it and speak out about it.
Brent writes, love the panel. I own plenty of guns for hunting. You don't need an AR-15 to hunt. If you need an automatic rifle to hunt, you're a terrible hunter. I keep all my guns locked in a safe. It comes down to responsibility.
That letter writer is the person that I've met since I've lived in LA and who really broadened my perspective about how people feel about guns. And note that they said they're not going to use it on humans. So, you know, that's a really important piece of it.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many more letters. We'll talk more about this. We welcome yours, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Six killed in a Nashville school shooting, including three children. Mm. We've been talking about this story this morning. And normally we'd move on, but we have so many letters, and I do want to get to them. And we'll go through these, and then we will move on to other things. This from Nick, who says, I think the difference between the vaping issue and guns is just that vaping industry doesn't have lobbyists that are as deeply set into the system as gun companies do. I get the point, but, you know, they were able to make some fundamental changes, and the product is still there. It's just who can access it.
I would also dispute it. Big Tobacco's always had major lobbying.
Yes,
clout.
That is a very good point.
But society and the number of people who smoke today versus 25, 50 years ago has changed. Society has recognized the risk and the danger and the problem with young people picking up smoking and then smoking their entire life and dying of cancer or whatever. You know, we know that problem and we know how to solve it, make it hard for the kids to get it.
By the way, I was not trying in any way, I hope this was clear, I was not trying to equate those two issues as being bad. What my point was is in the marketing. And in the marketing, they said, okay, we have tobacco and we're going to make it more attractive to a younger audience. And that's not what the gun makers are doing with these guns and how they're marketing them and having, you know, like kit editions. And that's really...
if you're the president of a gun making organization, and your numbers are going down, what happens to you?
Well, are their numbers going down?
No, I said if.
Well, you expand the base. You reach out to
you
market.
You try to do that.
Yeah, you try to expand the base, and then you try to
get
laws.
Why would we be surprised about that? I mean, that's what you're always trying to do. That's what success means for business. You're trying to grow your business.
Exactly.
And Tennessee had just recently there's a bill to lower the age of possession of firearms from 21 to 18. I mean, so that would expand, that would add 3 more years of people who could buy guns.
And what would the rationale be for doing that?
It would add 3 more years for people to buy guns.
Yes, but also the theoretical rationale would be...
You're old enough to join the armed services, you're old enough to vote. You ought to be old enough to own a gun.
Yeah. Well, and also, obviously, it's going to sell more guns, as Alan pointed out. But the other thing, too, is that these laws are passing in this environment.
Right.
These laws are passing in state houses across the country in the same states where these tragedies are happening at an alarming rate.
Well, these very effective public relations campaigns by the gun manufacturers and the NRA are scaring people into thinking that their sacred, God-given Second Amendment rights are being infringed on and will be taken away, so you better get your guns.
Okay, I'm the one keeping us back to basics. We changed our views on smoking because all of us have fathers, husbands, whatever, who died.
That's
we changed
right.
our views on gay rights because all of us have daughters, sons, whatever, who are gay. And the only time that society has this big change you're all talking about is when we all know somebody who died in gun violence. And we are fast approaching that point.
Absolutely. I mean, we know someone
who
does.
Do any of you know the correlation between states with more stringent gun laws and number of shootings versus states with less stringent gun laws and number of shootings?
That sounds like homework.
I think that they show that there is a reduction, but it's complicated because states that have stringent laws, like, say, Illinois, are right next to states that have less stringent laws, like, say, Wisconsin.
Well, look at the New York example of what happened out in Buffalo where the shooter got the gun in Pennsylvania.
Right.
So that's one of the issues.
Yeah.
All right. Back to the letters. Spencer says, why is human slaughter an option? I think this is a point that Fran was making. Don't you know that's how we deal with our problems? We eschew and mock peaceful diplomacy in places like Ukraine and favor of human slaughter. That's what we do. Should any of us be surprised by yet another individual who has chosen to deal with their own problems by killing other human beings? Guns is the name of this letter. Melinda writes, this gun violence went on long before COVID separated people. Yes, mental illness may have been exacerbated by COVID, and we as a society are more open to talking about it. But at the end of the day, the gun culture in this country is like nowhere else in the world, and it allows for this violent behavior countrywide, which I believe is a point that Rosemary made earlier as well. Sandra writes to Fran, I grew up in rural upstate New York in a family of hunters. I was taught that you never point a gun at another human being.
I apologize for, you know, having grown up so cluelessly in the, you know, place of surf and sun, which is Southern California, but it really opened my mind to talk to a lot of, you know, great friends who said, hey, I grew up in a really, really different way. And same thing as the writer says, you know, we never pointed that at humans, but it was part of my growing up. And to me, that was just outside of my experience, and it broadened my horizon.
Can anybody tell me, have any gun regulation ever passed in this country that really stepped on the rights of legitimate gun owners, hunters, sportsmen? No.
That's a really good question, Rosemary.
Well, people would argue that if you limit how many bullets I can have in my magazine, that means I have to stop shooting every few, you know, more often and reload. And that's inconvenient, and that's an infringement on my Second Amendment right.
It takes me a little bit longer to kill the squirrel?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, or hit the target, the bullseye, whatever.
Marty says, one has to ask after every school shooting what happens the next day in schools everywhere. Does life go on and the kids talk about it only in their friend groups, or does the school hold an assembly where better thinking, hopefully, and guidance prevails? Well, I mean, schools have protocol, and kids today that go to school know that this is something that can happen. They have drills.
They have parents.
Well, they have. I mean, they have drills in the schools that work with. They have work with them and trying to be ready for exactly this situation because it's an all too common situation. We go to Russ. The panel has discussed mass shootings dozens of times. Really, the only thing left to do is list the names of those lawmakers who favor selling machine guns to sociopaths. It's a long list.
Yeah.
We go to Bill. I think efforts to ban weapons is futile. As humans, we still have no compunction about taking another's life. Until we evolve to the point where life is sacred, nothing will change. Another Will says, I highly doubt that this school shooting will make things worse for trans people in red states. Are they going to try and say trans people can have AR-15s? I seriously doubt it. They have a pathological lack of self-awareness. However, they are not likely to bring up this one shooting committed by a trans person. They talk about about school shootings in the moment because they have to. Their preference is to ignore all of these shootings. Then we go to Donna. Since Congress is unwilling to take on gun reform, what would it take to put the issue on the ballot and let the people of this country decide?
Well, you could do it in various states, that's for sure. The possibilities are that you could do that, but you need to do it in a way in which everybody gets in on it so that, you know, you're dealing with people in California, New York State, Arizona, that kind of thing.
Raymond says, as proof that sexual minorities have been mostly a gentle people, can you imagine any other minority scapegoated, isolated, thrown out of their families, jobs, and communities without extreme violence in this Christian country? All races and nearly all religions in America hate queers and atheists, and only recently have been granted the human rights to work and love, which everyone else takes for granted. Trans people have also been denied the right to work, even by Clinton and Frank, thanks to the Radical Feminist and Employment Non-Discrimination Act, for which the Democrats never apologized.
Well, there's probably a lot of points that letter makes that I would say are factually incorrect.
Yeah.
and, you know, but it's a great talking point. I mean, religions don't wholesale hate transgender people. Many embrace them. I mean, to use generalities like that is just it's boulder dash rhetoric is what it was.
Christine writes, it seems that some value the potential life an embryo more than the life of those children already living. Once born, you are potential targets for an unhappy gun owner. Then we go to this letter from Shyla, who says, it's amazing and sad to look back at the presidential response to Sandy Hook, Obama coming out to make a special statement through tears over the horrific act of violence against children. 10 years later, the shooting in Nashville got a small mention between lighthearted greetings at another event. We have become so desensitized.
Hmm.
Then we go to Gina, who says Tennessee, Florida should take this as a warning, as should everyone. Why can't we all just let us / anyone be themselves? It's not harming you. Then we go to Rick. Perhaps it's time for a strict interpretation of the Second Amendment, something these people that want a strict interpretation of the Constitution can't argue against. You cannot own a gun unless you're part of a well-regulated militia, unless it's licensed for hunting.
That'll be fought out for a long time to come.
But it's a good point.
Yes.
The interpretation of the Second Amendment,
sure,
by the Supreme Court has evolved since the 1980s, largely by putting more conservative justices on the Supreme Court who have taken a much more hands-off, or seeing the Second Amendment as being much more hands-off. You remember the Scalia decision back, I think, in the 90s that overturned the ban on hidden handguns in Washington, D.C., and said people had a right to have them. I mean, you know, little by little, the Supreme Court has whittled away at a lot of laws that were intended to control the possession and use of firearms.
Got a solution?
Well, the solution is to do the opposite. Put people on the Supreme Court who are more enlightened and then somehow get some of these cases onto the Supreme Court who are...
So in other words, not in our lifetime.
Yeah, that's right. But you got to start somewhere.
Dan says the solution to mass shootings and gun violence is very clear. Get rid of the guns. But clearly, profits, greed, and personal freedoms are more important than the lives of our children in this country. The choice has been made, and now we're living with the horrendous consequences. I don't see it changing anytime soon. Richard writes, what is lost on so many is the phrase a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state describes the notion of being armed in defense of the state and not of oneself. That is not what is happening now, and gunshot is the leading cause of death of children in the United States of America. I abridged that letter a bit. Jonathan says the reason the shooter shot is irrelevant. The issue is the guns, guns, guns. Andrew says, I want the media to show the bodies. Enough is enough. Show the horror. Show those pictures to the Republican lawmakers and force them to explain why assault rifles are allowed in civilian hands. Show those pictures to the public and force Republican supporters to explain their blind support of the Second Amendment. I'm a 12-year Marine Corps veteran with several deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan. I've seen horrors as a 19-year-old that no person should ever see, much less a 9-year-old sitting in a classroom, and I refuse to accept that assault rifles are allowed in civilian hands. Show the horror, break the pattern. Rosemary?
No, I don't want, no. Is it awful to say I'm sick of this topic?
Well, you can be sick of it, but we still are living with it, right?
Yeah, but we're not saying anything new, and neither are the letter writers. We've gone all over this.
We're all in agreement.
I know it's terrible. Yeah.
So what should we do? Not talk about it?
Well, I think the people...
taking command.
Yeah.
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
I said Rosemary's taking command.
No, I'm not. I realize even as I say it that it's like terrible, but
unfortunately, we have sat here, maybe the same people in this room,
had
this same discussion because we happened to be here on another morning after a terrible school shooting.
Right.
And that alone is so demoralizing. To come in and just talk about it more. What has to happen is all the people that are writing the letters and people like us have to vote, have to support efforts like, Moms Who Demand Action and other organizations that are, the Sandy Hook people and stand up for that. But it's difficult.
Well, I get what Rosemary's saying, and I personally, I want to apologize to you. I mean, I love being on this show, and I love when I, see people in the coffee shop and, say, oh, I heard you on Roundtable.
Right.
And I feel like I don't even know what to say.
Right.
It's tragic. It's heartbreaking. I always feel that way. I can't even believe I'm saying that. And so I feel like, what am I offering you all today? It's just... more shell shock. I have no wisdom. I don't know what to do, Alan. I'm sorry.
But the shell shock is important because when you express it and other people are feeling it, it becomes transferable. I think it's very important that if we're frustrated, we say so.
And I think that transference comes in I mean, how I look and see the letters.
You also see all the letters. I'm not criticizing. I understand why we've spent, almost a whole show on this. But I feel bad because we've added nothing new to the conversation and we have not talked about amazing things happening in Israel and Washington that also deserve attention.
There's so much to talk about.
Right.
I agree.
Right.
And on ChatGPT, just saying.
Yeah.
Right.
But the letters are affirming. I mean, at least... hearing the letters, I think some of the letters have been more articulate than many of the things that I've said. And I appreciate hearing them because it affirms me in the positions that I have. And I think you have an incredible audience here, Alan.
Yeah, the more we have, the more we talk about this, obviously, the higher the pile of objections to the way we act goes. I don't know how much sense that made, but I tried.
Anyway.
Well, and that last letter struck me about showing the bodies, and I don't know.
Yeah, the article that I keep talking about, the blast effect, talks about how typically these pictures are not shown to anybody because the bodies are virtually vaporized. You know, a first grader shot with a high velocity bullet in the jaw has no head anymore.
Well, you're the journalist. What are you, telling us here?
What I'm telling you is that in Algeria, where there were, when I worked there in the early 2000s, and there were terrorist attacks, these pictures were shown. Shredded babies, a woman holding up a baby who had no body left, a teenager on a table with no insides that were just spilled out all over the table. And these two, you get numb to. They had no effect, and people stopped buying newspapers, especially women, because they didn't want to see these pictures. So I get the idea. You think that, oh, this will just shock them into doing something. But it doesn't. Getting shot yourself didn't shock people into doing anything. Seeing babies shot didn't shock people into doing anything. It's just like waiting for Trump to do one last thing and it'll make all of his supporters see the reality. And we wish that this would happen. It does not.
Well, you're a reporter. And to report means tell what's happening, tell it like it is. I've spoken about this too many times, but in my class at New Paltz, I used to have a guy named Vinny, and he always said, but is that the way it is? There is a reality here. And the more we talk about that reality, I think the better off we are.
Well, there's an exception to every rule. I mean, having been in a lot of discussions about what to show after an accident or after a tragedy and whether to show bodies or bodies covered by,
I mean, I don't think you should show children, no matter
all
what.
That. You don't I mean, think there, I'm there are there are just pictures and images and word pictures that are just so grim and so just difficult to write, to produce, to put in front of people. It does make them numb, and the only way, I mean, but there's an exception to the rule. You show it sometimes in war. I mean, look at the baby's body that washed up in Turkey, who was a drowned.
Baby didn't look, it looked like it was sleeping, though. That's the difference.
Right, but
there's a plane crash in Sarasota, and there were body parts all over the golf course. Right. And we were not allowed to write about that this was a taste thing.
Well,
what do you mean you weren't allowed? Yeah. Who didn't allow
the
you?
The editor above me.
Yeah.
I wrote him in, but she took it out.
Wow.
Meanwhile, in Israel.
Yeah, I think Israel's real important. And you've talked about that already. Mm-hmm. I think that's a harbinger of that, and Iran are harbingers of what could happen in this country. Rights are being taken away, and people are on the streets protesting. They care enough about the future of their country, the structure of their country, that they are on the streets every day. And they won, I guess, sort of a partial victory yesterday. Netanyahu says he will delay his self-serving and hideous laws to cut the power of the judiciary. But he didn't say he was going to withdraw it. He said he was going to delay the vote. And I hope that the protesters will keep with their vow to continue protesting until that actually happens, until the laws stop, not just the vote on the law.
It's a step, though, right?
It's a good step. Yeah, it's a good step.
The pictures of the people protesting is just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, I find that the numbers of people and their, the organization of so many people coming out to oppose this erasure of democracy that Netanyahu is trying to pull off is affirming. I mean, it shows that when people who have democracy are confronted with losing democracy, and they understand that, and they are able to stand up to it. It's affirming, and the trouble is, it kind of sneaks in little laws here and there. You know, Erdogan.
Is it transferable?
Turkey, Poland is doing it little by little. They're taking away the power and giving the president or the elected head of state more power, and it erases very gradually. At least in Israel, they recognized what the impact of minimizing the authority of the judicial branch of government would have, and how much
Netanyahu is a crook.
Yeah,
and
he's a crook.
He's trying to save his own life, and he's vowed to bring this back up later in the year.
But how does he even get into power? That has mystified me.
Because their country is as divided as ours. How did Trump get into power?
Yeah.
And he, I mean, he would look at the lengths he went to pushing this. Huge disruptions in the country. Fires people in his cabinet. Remember when Espy was fired? We are not unlike Israel. That's why it's so important to look at what's happening there.
He was a master coalition builder, and now he has to build a coalition with much more difficult groups.
Yes.
And so, you know, he's kind of getting stuck with it. But before, I think that's how he worked. He was able to build a coalition, and he was able to make stuff happen. And he had this, I don't know, you know, in a way, Trump had an almost Teflon quality. Like, he could do all this bad stuff, and it didn't seem to matter that much. And although, let me just point out that Teflon is really bad for you. And Netanyahu also, you know, seemed to have that. Up till now, and you know,
I'm hoping his government falls apart before the next year part, when he's going to bring this law up again, and it's in trouble. You know, the right wing part of his coalition
wanted
this.
It's been in trouble for years.
Yeah. Well, it's what, 5 elections in 4 years or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, think about what it means when the coalition is really led by these people that are quite extreme. I mean, we're seeing this in Congress now, right?
Yes.
I mean. You know, there are more similarities than one might like.
I would like to see him go to jail. I think that's... He hasn't even been tried yet. I mean, the procedures have been delayed
for years. It seems to come up, and
years.
Then he gets in power, and they have to hold off.
Yeah.
And then
yes.
he tries to change things like he is now so that they can't go after him.
Yeah, sort of like Stormy Daniels, years after the fact, that's coming to a court.
Yeah.
We hope.
All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll finish up right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion discussing Netanyahu delaying judicial overhaul after unprecedented strikes and protests. One of the things that struck me, Rosemary, is how clear the messages of these protests. I mean, they have. It's not just we're against everything. We're against this thing.
This one reform, he calls
right.
it. I love that. Yeah, Judicial Reform Act. Yeah, and it's the, I guess, the coalition, not political coalition, but the groups that are opposed to it, universities and unions and people in the military. Key in the military. And they are seeing the judiciary for what it is, which is one of the pillars of democracy. And if it goes, if it is subject to executive oversight, you're losing one of the three pillars of a democratic society, and they all recognize that. It's an extraordinary event, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I find it inspiring.
And me too.
People do recognize the importance of maintaining a separate and independent judiciary, one that can't be overruled by the executive branch. And I wish Americans had enough civic training, you know. They don't teach civics anymore, do they, in school?
No, we teach civics. As I have always said, it's what we teach when we teach civics.
Well, we ought to teach.
We teach public interest technology, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Another aspect to the story, which I think is an important one that I want to take on in our remaining time, is how Joe Biden is dealing with this and how should the president be dealing with this.
Yeah. He has been behind the scenes talking to the government, to Netanyahu, saying, "Back down, listen to the protesters." It's in contrast to how he's dealing with France, where there are also protests going on right now over lowering the retirement age to 62, I think.
64.
Raising it to 64.
From
62 to
64. They lowered
Sorry
it. France
that.
Would be okay
They'd
with that.
They'd be all right with that. Sorry,
yeah,
I said that wrong.
Let's make it 54.
I said that wrong.
54.
And he's not getting involved, at least that we've heard very much about in France's protests. But we have, of course, America has lots of influence, I think, still in Israel, and he's trying to use it for democracy. And I am sure that he sees the parallels between Israel and America that I do.
Hmm. They're fairly blatantly obvious.
Yep. Yep.
If you just look at it.
We both countries have to stop electing corrupt men.
Hmm.
They have to defend the institutions that are already there.
Yeah, that's easy, Rosemary.
Is it? Is it?
That's an easy
point. So easy, yeah, so easy. Yeah.
Well, it's the spread of disinformation in both places, the counter-rhetoric, the ability to lie and get away with it and promulgate that lie, and that is troubling. And I think it's, really what is going on in the U.S.
People believe
two different versions of things.
Right. There's also a generational conflict in Israel, as there is here. Young people do not feel the same about Palestinians and Arab relations with Arabs as the old guard that established it. And Netanyahu he's the longest serving prime minister in Israel's history. That's extraordinary.
On and off. Yeah.
Yeah, it hasn't been continuous. Yeah.
Rosemary, do you know how active the, air quotes here, younger demographic is in Israel compared to the U.S.?
Well, I think these protests
compared to the U.S. or really anywhere, but compared to the U.S.
I suspect that liberal Israelis, and a large component of that is young. The universities, which were really active in these protests, indicate that yes, they are getting involved. They feel way more under threat than we appear to in America.
And you find that in your classes, Rosemary?
What, that they're active?
Yeah.
No, I find that they're kind of overwhelmed by the problems, disgusted with boomers and what we've done.
Mm. Boomer.
Yeah, thanks, boomer. Yeah, I love that. Love that. Well, my granddaughter tells me that. Learned from her father. but yes, they blame us. This is a situation years in the making, and now they're being saddled with it. I sense from them frustration and the same sort of feeling that we have here talking about what can we do about guns. How do we fix it?
Well, Rosemary, you and I teach different classes, and I teach a public interest technology class, and I'll tell you that my students, and all of this is anecdotal, of course, my students actually really care about what's going on and are thoughtful about what they can do about it. I mean, even before they get into class, they try to protect themselves, they try to use digital technologies in a positive way. They really care about the really, really complicated issues. And
I want to meet them.
I'm looking at your verbs. Care, worry, think. I don't see any action in there. What do they do?
Well, I don't even know. I know this can be very anecdotal, but if they don't, especially younger students, don't seem to know what's going on at all. When you tell them, and I agree with Rosemary 100%, when you tell them what is going on, they seem overwhelmed, they seem befuddled by the problem, and
what do you want me to do about it?
Right. What do you want me to do about it? And you screwed it up, and if we go and we change it, then you're just going to go. Somebody else is going to come in and change it back. I don't know. It's
hopeless.
Yeah. I mean,
I see really, really great kids who do things in their lives to try to change things, to make it the way they think it should be. I have kids in Massburg, and they're working through the political system, more power to them. I have students doing things about, their own digital profile. I have students doing things for their families and their dorms and their clubs, and they are doing things. I mean, they're doing as much as they can for whatever situation they're in.
Yeah.
And, shout out to public interest technology students. They're doing great.
I think you've gone just a little too far when you say they're doing as much as they can. There's always more you can do.
I mean, Vera speaks up for her
students. Perfect. I will give you that for sure.
Vera also defends her students, too, at CNN and says they are involved and active. But I don't even...
You don't see it.
I don't see it in even voting, which is not a big deal.
Yeah, the voting number should be better. But there are some inspiring kids out there, and the future is up
to
them.
Without talking about anybody specific, because I would never do that, especially here. But without talking about anybody specific, teachers tend to always put the best face on their own students. Quite often you will see that.
Frequently.
Yeah.
Not always.
No, you're right, Mike. You're right.
Well, I mean, I...
both Rosemary and I did an event last night, and that we were talking about. And,
yeah, what was the event, Joe?
Well, it was I was talking about media and complex times, and a woman came up to me at the end and said that Rosemary and I did not do enough to give the students who were in the audience hope. And that we basically were downers.
That was your job.
And that by telling them this information, that we were giving them a feeling of that we're doomed and of desperation.
You think they didn't already know whatever you were telling them? Because these guys are very savvy.
Well, I mean, and our point was, okay, what do you want us to lie to them? I don't know. It struck me as, look, I get it. You want to inspire them as well, but if you're talking to someone and talking to a group and a group of college students at a prestigious college, and they don't know who the vice president is, and they don't know that a bank failed, and they don't know that there was a school shooting that day, and they don't know of the climate report that the UN came out with. I don't know. I mean, is that unimportant? I don't know. It seems to me that it's important to know those things if you are counting on them to change something and to be responsible for changing something.
Yeah, I mean, as an instructor, I know you guys are too. You know, with all due respect to that woman, and she certainly has a right to her opinion, I think it's important to be straight with these guys. I mean, it's a world, you know, it's like we all have to try to solve these problems, even though we completely fail at it a lot of the time. And you can't solve a problem if you don't really understand the problem.
Right.
You have to understand the problem.
All right. Well, that's it for this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for not too much.
We should have started with the machine question. We missed that.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, we'll get. Jim was afraid it was going to be sloughed off on him, and it probably will be.
Now.
Yeah.
He'll have to explain it next time.
Excellent. Fran, always good to talk to you. Thank you very much. Alan, thank you.
Thanks,
great to have you here. Mike, thank you so much. Rosemary, always a pleasure. We'll be back right after this.